The final presidential debate of the campaign is over. President Obama and former Massachusetts Governor Mitt Romney squared off in Boca Raton, Florida last night. The debate centered on foreign policy, but both candidates kept steering to domestic issues. This is River to River on Iowa Public Radio. I'm Clay Masters. What foreign policy issues did the candidates leave out? In this heated election, is foreign policy as important as the issues that face voters at home? In the first part of our show, we'll look into last night's debate and get analysis from political science professors Lindsay Kahn at the University of Northern Iowa and Richard Monsbach at Iowa State. Then in the second half, we'll hear from Iowa voters, as well as reporters and analysts in the key swing states Ohio, Florida, and New Hampshire. Join our conversation after the news. This is River to River on Iowa Public Radio. I'm Clay Masters, sitting in for Ben Kiefer. Last night's presidential debate was on foreign policy issues. When the candidates weren't steering the conversation back to domestic policy, they spent most of their time talking about the Middle East. Joining us from our Cedar Falls studio is Lindsay Kahn, Assistant Professor of Political Science at the University of Northern Iowa. Hi, Lindsay.
Hi.
And in our AIM studio is Richard Monsbach, Professor of Political Science at Iowa State. Hello, Richard.
Hi, Clay.
Now, the big question everyone seems to be asking is, what foreign policy issues or countries did the candidates leave out last night? Lindsay?
Oh, my short list would be the Eurozone crisis, anything at all about trade policy, environmental issues, Mexico, and pretty much all of Africa.
And Richard?
Well, nothing much was said about foreign policy last night. It was like two alpha males speaking in cliches, and even what they spoke about, they said very little of any substance about. It really was a reflection of the fact, I think, that roughly 12% of the American public even ranks foreign policy among the top three of the issues in this election.
Well, yeah, and you bring up a good point. I mean, I've been at rallies here in Iowa for both President Obama and Mitt Romney. Most people, most of the voters I've talked to on both sides, seldom bring up any kind of foreign policy. So you kind of answered the question, but is foreign policy important to people in this election?
Well, it rarely is important to people in national elections. There are some exceptions, obviously, 1968 with Vietnam. But in fact, what happened last night was fascinating because it wasn't so much what was omitted as the fact that there was no difference between the two candidates. Mitt Romney fascinated me because in his headlong dash to move to the center of the spectrum, could not find any issues really that he disagreed with regarding the president's policies. And I found that fascinating. And that's one of the reasons I think they kept coming back to domestic politics. The other, of course, being that that's the core, the alpha and omega, if you will, of what this campaign is all about.
Lindsay, would you agree with that?
Absolutely. I mean, it has been the case for pretty much as long as we've been measuring these things, that voters in general do not care as much about foreign policy. They don't know as much about foreign policy. And so the intelligent candidate tries to make himself seem like a strong leader that people can trust and not to worry about any of this. And that has been, of course, the line of attack that most Republicans have made against the president, that his leadership is weak, that he's all over the map. Obviously, that's the attack the president made on Governor Romney last night. Yeah, I completely agree. I mean, most voters are not that interested in these things. Most voters don't know enough to make a judgment on these things. And Governor Romney definitely, the entire debate was them claiming that they disagreed with each other and then saying they would do exactly the same thing.
And why is it that they seem to agree? Is that a function of the fact that whomever is in office, the options are the same?
A little bit.
I think in part the office holder as a guides debates on foreign policy, at least to the degree that in this case the president can talk about that which was not covered by national security. There were a couple of issues there that had to be skirted, for example, on cyber war because of national security questions. But I don't think that the governor is nearly as comfortable with foreign policy as he is with other issues. He's not got training in that, and although he's a fast learner, it really is a different type of study, I think, than that which he would have had in his previous experience.
Well, and if I can just jump back in on that, Governor Romney has moved towards the middle, as as both of us have already pointed out. His positions a few weeks ago or a few months ago were, in fact, in some cases, different from those of the president. And certainly there is a segment of the American population that would like to see a different kind of foreign policy than what we have. That would be sort of the segment that is supporting the Libertarian ticket, the Ron Paul, the Gary Johnson voters, who would like to see us take a much less active approach in foreign policy in general. Mitt Romney tends to fall into the sort of somewhere in between the hardliner and internationalist camp. I think Obama is firmly in the internationalist camp, but there is, you know, there is a section of the U.S. public that would like to see both of them back off.
Well, that, of course, covered all 2% of the electorate, which is probably one of the reasons why the governor has moved so much back to the center, I think.
Absolutely. He had to. Yes.
If you think of some of I think the only difference is one of tone, which is what these debates are all about. I mean, where I think the president would use the term partnership, the governor would use the term leadership. But in fact, they're talking about identical things. And some of the positions that the party was advocating until recently, I think, as you said, were just irresponsible. And you know, any thought that somehow the United States would go back into Afghanistan, for example, which was implicit in some of the criticism of the president's policy some weeks ago, is bizarre from a public opinion point of view. No, very few Americans want to see us step up to the plate again in either Iraq or Afghanistan. What's interesting is that in addition to the issues that Lindsay quite rightly pointed out were omitted, really not much was said of substance about China. I mean, there was a little China beating session, but the real issue there is engagement versus an adversarial relationship. And although the president himself used the word adversary on one occasion, I think, last night, neither party was prepared to really hammer China the way the Republicans had been doing up until recently, I think.
And I think, if anything, I think that trade relations with China probably resonate the most with Iowa voters, being that we're such a large exporter of things like pork and corn and soybeans. But you feel like those kind of questions about trade weren't really addressed?
Oh, the trade issues were addressed entirely for Detroit. I mean, there's no question. That was, you know, that was the unspoken agenda. And it was spoken when, of course, the president switched it over to Detroit and the automobile industry.
Ohio, the swing state.
And Ohio, of
right,
course, yeah.
You're listening to River to River on Iowa Public Radio. We're talking about last night's presidential debate. Are you an undecided voter? Did last night's election move you in support of either candidates? Give us a call. Our number is 1-866-780-9100 or rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org. We're also on Twitter at IPRTalk. Now, I want to get to a couple sound bites from the debate last night. The evening started with Governor Romney congratulating President Obama on killing Osama bin Laden, but then continuing by saying the U.S. couldn't kill its way out of the problem in the Middle East. The president took the opportunity to point out the governor's relative inexperience with foreign policy, referring to a statement Romney made in a CNN interview in March.
Governor Romney, I'm glad that you recognize that al-Qaeda is a threat. Because a few months ago, when you were asked what's the biggest geopolitical threat facing America, you said Russia. Not al-Qaeda. You said Russia. In the 1980s, are now calling to ask for their foreign policy back because, you know, the Cold War has been over for 20 years. But, Governor, you know, when it comes to our foreign policy, you seem to want to import the foreign policies of the 1980s, just like the social policies of the 1950s and the economic policies of the 1920s.
Now, we should point out that Romney called Russia the United States' number one geopolitical foe, not our greatest security threat. This moment provided a soundbite that's been heard a lot today. But let's talk a little bit about the exchange. Russia provides a concrete foe, a country with borders, while terrorist groups are harder to pin down. Is that why Romney chose Russia as a focus, Lindsay?
Well, I honestly have absolutely no idea why he picked Russia as a focus, but it is possible that Russia is a safer thing to point at. I mean, honestly, as you pointed out, Clay, most Americans, not just Iowans, but most Americans are really focused on China. But it's sketchy to point at China and say this is our biggest foe, because we do have an important trading relationship with them. We do want to try to manage China's rise, etc. Russia is sort of an easy, you know, whipping boy, because they're big, they do things that we don't like, and they really pose very little threat to us at all.
So Russia is a scapegoat?
Well, you know, what it really reflects in my mind is how these things are seen as entirely black or white. I mean, you're either a foe or a friend.
Yeah.
And in the case of, frankly, both Russia and China, they're neither. All right. And this is subtle, and this is difficult to get across in a soundbite. I have no idea why Russia was selected either, although, of course, it does have a lot of nuclear weapons and therefore remains a significant actor in global politics. But in many respects, Russia is as much a partner and is becoming more so as it is a potential foe. And I think geopolitical, by the way, was added last night because I think there was recognition that that was really a kind of foolish thing. And indeed, Russian leaders reacted with vehement annoyance at Romney's comments. It was just not mm-hmm. necessary, and it was just irritating.
Yeah,
I want to get to some of our callers. Dennis from Marion is on the line. Dennis, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
What's your question?
Well, I'm confused. Your one of your guests there talked about what a quick learner Mr. Romney is. Yet last night in the debate, he said that Syria, or that Iran needed Syria in order to have access to seaways. And yet Iran is bordered on three sides by water. And you know, why that wasn't as big a gaffe as, say, talk about Poland several years ago, and why nobody in the media, no learned person like your professors, are bringing up what a stupid statement that was.
Okay, thank you, Dennis.
Well, you're not going to get much defense from a geographic point of view from me. But I think what Romney was trying to say when he misspoke like that was simply that Syria is the gateway, the entree, if you will, for Iranian influence in much of the Middle East. He might also have said last night that Iraq is as well, or at least is becoming so. And I think all he was trying to do, and I say this not in defense, but simply to expound on it, that Syria is indeed, as I think the president put it, or maybe both of them put it, as a matter of fact, is the most formidable friend and indeed perhaps the only true friend that Iran has in what we call the Middle East or the Near East.
It was an extremely stupid thing to say. He said a couple of stupid things last night. I personally don't see the value of focusing on things that are either obvious misstatements. I seriously doubt that Governor Romney meant to imply that Iran was landlocked. I don't see the value of focusing on those things. It was a throwaway comment. It was a stupid thing to say. And sort of that's, you know, we could spend a lot of time pointing out stupid things that people in office have said. I don't think that's really the most valuable way to spend our time.
Well, on the issue of Middle East, Governor Romney repeatedly criticized the president for not backing Israel strongly enough against threats like a nuclear-armed Iran. He claims the president did not start his term with a strong enough stance against Iran, calling a trip to the region in the first year of an Obama administration an apology tour. Here's what he had to say.
Mr. President, the reason I call it an apology tour is because you went to the Middle East and you flew to Egypt and to Saudi Arabia and to Turkey and Iraq. And by the way, you skipped Israel, our closest friend in the region. But you went to the other nations. And by the way, they noticed that you skipped Israel. And then in those nations, and on Arabic TV, you said that America had been dismissive and derisive. You said that on occasion, America had dictated to other nations. Mr. President, America has not dictated to other nations. We have freed other nations from dictators.
This idea of the president apologizing for America is one that strikes a chord with many conservative voters.
And it's frankly idiotic. I'm going to jump right in on this one. That's the idiocy, not the not the wrong, what we should call port of call. Because, in fact, what the president was doing in his speech in Cairo was trying to, and here's where the term reset should have been, reset relations with the Muslim world more generally, which have been appalling since long before 2001, long before 9/11. And indeed, of course, we have dictated to other countries, though perhaps, I do understand why Americans aren't thrilled by the recognition of that fact. Of course we have. But the president did make one mistake, I think, back then, and indeed probably would have been wise in including Israel on the trip, and in fact including in that something along the lines of we need to stop the settlements. Now, the president's response, obviously prepared, I think, for this, was very good in terms of getting away from the topic and in referring to Romney's earlier or more recent tour of the region and his use of it largely to collect funds. What, in fact, Obama should have also added, but probably would not have been necessarily a popular comment, was Mr. Romney's comments about the Palestinians, which, frankly, at the time were derisive and were entirely out of step with American policy, which recognizes a two-state solution in the region. And indeed, Romney has been taped since then making even more derisive comments about Palestinians and the impossibility of reaching an agreement. If he would become president, they will remember that.
Lindsay, would you agree with that analysis?
Mostly, yes, I think, and Richard pointed this out before, one of the real differences between these two candidates, and Richard called it a difference of tone. I think that's true, but there is some difference of substance there. Romney is very much in the camp of what we would call preponderance people who want the United States' role in the world to be one of being way far out in front. You know, that's the military spending aspect of it, leading from the front, telling everyone, you know, not necessarily telling everyone what to do. I totally agree with Richard that we have, in fact, done that. But certainly not getting together with other people and sitting down and talking around a table, but showing up and saying, this is our plan. You are free to get on board if you want. If you don't want, then guess what? You're going to have to deal with us. Obama is in what I would call the sort of reciprocity camp, which, by the way, I don't mean to imply as weakness. This is simply a different approach to these things. He believes very strongly that sometimes in order to bargain an effective, in order to get an effective negotiation or bargaining situation, you need to be willing to talk to people or at least imply that you might actually come to some kind of compromise. This appeals to two different types of voters very much.
Now, you were talking about tone. We have somebody wrote in an email wanting to address the moderator of last night's debate as a contributing factor to the poor level of our political dialogue, is what Brian writes. Bob Schieffer, he says, didn't ask any penetrating questions, did a terrible job keeping the candidates on topic, and never pushed them to answer when they failed to address the issues at hand. Would you say that you agree with that? Do you think Bob did an okay job? What do you think?
First of all, I know Bob from many, many years, and I've watched him, and I appreciate him. His predecessor in the second debate, of course, was criticized for trying to set the tone of the debate, and now Schieffer is criticized for not doing so. I think the bottom line is you don't tell a president and a candidate what they're going to say because it's not going to do you any good. And if you do, it's going to create a lot of difficulty in the future.
Now Schieffer, plainly asked what happens if we withdraw troops and Afghanistan isn't ready. Neither really answered the question. What does that tell us about Afghanistan?
Well, it's lost. To put it crudely, It's been lost for ages, and nobody's had the nerve to get up and say it. But it's not a terrible loss. I was interested that what was discussed last night, a little more arcane but far more important, was Pakistan, which I think both candidates recognized the importance of Pakistan. And that was a little more nuanced and subtle than most of the rest of the discussion, even though, again, they ended up agreeing with one another.
Yeah, on Afghanistan, I mean, certainly there is no way that we will get a functioning Western-style democracy in Afghanistan. And I think, you know, the president has admitted in the past that that is probably not going to happen. We did at some point start talks with the Taliban, which we had said we weren't going to do. I think everyone recognizes that we're not going to get exactly what we wanted there, and that at some point we have to cut our losses. What I thought was interesting was that both candidates basically said, oh, sure, they'll be great. You know, of course they'll be ready to. I mean, Mitt Romney basically said, absolutely, everything is on track. Right. The Afghan security forces are ready to take over. Everything will be fine, which is, and both candidates said this, but it's just downright
ridiculous. You know, I agree with you completely. In the famous words of Yogi Berra, deja all over again, deja vu all over again. The same was said, of course, about Iraq. And they know better. They know much better. But indeed, we've been in Afghanistan much too long. We're not going to even get an Afghan-type democracy. In fact, we're not going to get a unified Afghan state because there's never been one, as the British discovered on three separate occasions earlier, and as the Soviet Union discovered in the late 1970s. You just can't hammer this together. What was equally interesting, you talk about questions that were not answered, was the question that had to do with what would you do if the Israelis actually announced to you that they were bombing Iran? And again, neither was going to touch that one with a barge pole.
Now, Lindsay, I want to go back to something you said at the beginning when you were talking about issues that were not addressed during the debate, and something that I've seen a lot just from Twitter, people saying that, you know, three debates into it, and we really didn't hear much about environmental issues. You bring up climate change. What do you say to that?
Well, I think the president doesn't want to talk about it because he really hasn't done much in terms of international efforts on this. He has been preoccupied with some other things. I think some of his domestic policies, you know, he has pushed for alternative sources of energy, etc. But both candidates, of course, are pushing for energy independence, and energy independence is not climate friendly. Neither one of them. I mean, I think Governor Romney had nothing to say about international climate issues or any other environmental issues because he, as somebody who believes very much in the free market, is going to want to approach those issues from a free market perspective. And President Obama probably didn't want to address it because while it would appeal to his base, he doesn't really have much of anything to show for his administration on
that.
Well,
there was one interesting difference. If you noticed, only one of the candidates used the magic word coal. And
yes,
that was Governor Romney. And it was fascinating where, you know, the metaphor for the president was wind and solar. The metaphor for Romney was coal and gas, oil, actually. Mm. Both recognize the impact of gas, of course, on energy independence. And both favored energy independence, I think. It certainly is of no value to get into, from a campaign perspective, for the president at this point, to get into a discussion of international climate, because those who believe in it will vote for him now for a variety of reasons, and you don't want to upset the apple cart at this stage.
Yeah.
And you've been listening to River to River on Iowa Public Radio News, joined by Lindsay Kahn, assistant professor of political science at the University of Northern Iowa. And in our AIM studio, Richard Monsbach, professor of political science at Iowa State. Thanks so much to both of you for joining us today.
Our pleasure, and it was a pleasure meeting you, Lindsay.
You too, Richard. Thanks.
This is River to River on Iowa Public Radio. I'm Clay Masters, sitting in for Ben Kiefer. Well, the final debate is over, and living in a swing state, the campaign is still full speed ahead for both Governor Romney and President Obama, who will both be in Iowa tomorrow. In the second part of today's show, we'll talk with reporters and analysts about how all of the debates are influencing voters in swing states, if at all. But first, to hear from Iowa voters. We had a couple of our reporters, Sandhya Dirks and John Pimble, stationed at watch parties of the debate for both the Democrats and Republicans in and around Des Moines. Here is Rhonda Hill, who was at a Republican watch party.
I mean, if he could walk into this room tonight, I would feel like I knew Mitt Romney a lot better if I could sit and talk to him. And I would probably feel the same way about his opponent. But I think that these debates have given him a national stage to really showcase who he is and the his demeanor and how he presents the issues.
And now to the Democratic Watch Party. This is Cece Ibsen, who watched the debate at a Des Moines bar.
One thing I wish he did better was to talk more about the problems he inherited. Because I think he's been put, you know, people want somebody to fix everything for them. So you want some guy to fix it in 4 years. That's impossible. We didn't create the situation in 4 years. It's not going to get fixed in 4 years. I wish the president was a little bit stronger and attacked a little bit more on what he truly had to face when he took office. I think he's done a terrific job with what he's had to work with over the past 4 years. I have every hope that he's going to continue. And I don't think they're failed policies. You can complain all you want that unemployment isn't below 6%. But I have to ask you, what would unemployment be if Mitt Romney had been president the past 4 years?
So there's some voices from a Republican and a Democrat here in Iowa watching the debates last night, or the debate. This half we have Scott Fenn, news director at WUSF in Tampa, Florida. Scott, thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Clay, and it's good to be on Iowa Public Radio. I am a proud native of Creston, Iowa, so I'm very happy to be back home in a way.
Well, welcome home.
Thank you.
Also by phone, Karen Kassler, State House Bureau Chief at Ohio Public Radio and Television. Hi, Karen.
Hi there. How are you?
Doing well. And Arnie Arneson, a New Hampshire political analyst and former Democratic candidate for governor. Hi, Arnie.
Hi, and a proud mother of a University of Iowa graduate. So there we go. Just to keep up with you, Scott.
There's a lot of great Iowa love. Okay. So all the things you heard on tape from these, or the two things that you heard from these Iowa voters, are you guys hearing similar things in your swing state? We'll start with you, Scott.
Yeah, we're very much hearing that. And we're hearing a lot more enthusiasm about Romney after the first debate. It has not gone down. Matter of fact, it was almost like overnight after that debate, we just saw a flowering of these Romney Ryan bumper stickers and yard signs everywhere. And I think that might help explain why Romney is now a slight favorite in Florida, about 2 points ahead in most of the polls.
Well, and a lot of voters that I've been talking with at some of the rallies have been saying that Governor Romney has been doing a better job at being more personable. Are you hearing things of that nature, Karen?
Well, yeah, I think that first debate, I had a reporter friend who sat in on a focus group that night and mm-hmm. said that the damage that was done by the president's appearance in that first debate was pretty serious, and he's apparently taken a while to come back because the polls before that first debate showed, I mean, it was almost a 10-point race in Ohio mm-hmm. between Obama and Romney. And now it's that lead is cut in half. Obama's still leading, but there's definitely a jump back for Romney in these last couple of debate appearances.
Out there in New Hampshire, Arnie, what are you hearing?
Well, there's no question that first debate, that what Barack Obama did for Mitt Romney in 90 minutes was something Mitt Romney couldn't do for himself in almost 4 years, which is basically hand him a chance at this election. And you can actually see it in the polls in New Hampshire, because just before that first debate, Barack Obama was beating Mitt Romney. I think the numbers were like 61 to 37. I mean, you can't even imagine it. And now they just came out of the field, and it is definitely tight, and Barack Obama is still winning, but he's winning now 49-41. He's rehabilitated from 2 weeks ago, where you really saw the damage that was done from that first debate. But it is it's close, but Obama is still consistently leading. But there was a significant erosion, because what happened in that first debate was that Barack Obama was able to excite the Republican base.
I want to reach out to our listeners, to weigh in. How have these debates shaped your perception of the candidates? Have they changed your mind or reinforced opinions? Give us a call, 1-866-780-9100, or email us at rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org, or tweet us at IPR Talk. Now, a lot of the analysis that I was hearing afterwards was just that in this last debate, Governor Romney was acting more like the incumbent. Did you hear any of that from any of the voters that you've talked with, anybody that's been watching that?
No.
Everybody's saying no? Okay.
No.
So did you have anyone stationed at any watch parties or get any reaction last night from any voters who were watching the debate?
Well, our sense after talking to some voters is that it really didn't change all that much. I guess Obama's nominally being called the winner, but I don't sense that either of the two debates changed the needle that much. The debate that really changed everything was that first debate.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people are saying that Romney still has momentum. I'm not so sure about that. I mean, at least the polling and the voters that we've talked to indicate that, you know, Obama's done a good job of staunching the flow. And he had a rally this morning here in Florida that attracted 11,000 people. And so he's still generating a lot of excitement on his side. I think what you're going to see from now until Election Day is just this really close race where the main focus is getting out the vote. And we'll see whether Obama's big, you know, get out the vote and all of his, he has 200 field offices in Florida, whether that is going to do the trick or whether Romney, and especially in Florida, was able to convince enough undecided voters to make it swing his way.
Now, Scott, do you guys have early voting there in Florida?
We do. It's not very long. It's not as long as Iowa, where I understand it's already underway.
Yeah, that's right.
Ours doesn't start until next week. Although Obama's doing something really strange, in my understanding, or smart, depending on your point of view. He's asking his supporters to go to election offices, pick up an absentee ballot, fill it out right away at the election office, and turn it right back in again as a way of kind of early voting, you know, without early voting.
And I was out on the trail with both campaigns this weekend, and yeah, that was something that President Obama's campaign was really doing. The volunteers were saying, you know, do you have your ballot? Are you supporting the president? Get that in right now. You know, they were very, very much pushing early voting, absentee voting. Arnie or Karen, do you care to jump in on this?
Well, we've got Mr. Romney, Governor Romney, is going to be in one of the suburbs of Columbus today with our governor, once again going out with that ground game issue, and that's really what's going to be key. We were interesting in Ohio here in that in 2010, in that off-year election, it was a Republican sweep. They took every statewide office that was on the ballot and really heavily tipped Ohio into the red in our congressional delegation. Then last year, there was a big ballot issue with regard to collective bargaining reform, so it got the Democrats really organized and enthusiastic. So we're kind of having a battle here of who has the better ground game. Obama's campaign has twice the number of field offices that Romney's does, but Romney's people will tell you they've got volunteers, they've knocked on a million doors and all these other things. So it's really going to be a matter of who has the better ground game, especially in those counties that Obama won in 2008, those urban counties. Romney has the edge in a lot of rural Ohio, but the urban counties are the counties that have the more votes.
We don't have early voting in the state of New Hampshire, but I am going to tell you something, that Barack Obama is very leery of New Hampshire. Why do I say that? Because what did the caucus do for Barack Obama? It gave him, you know, his credibility. What did New Hampshire do? We told him on Friday, just before the primary, that he was beating Hillary Clinton, and then all of a sudden Hillary Clinton won. So what Obama knows is don't trust anything when it comes to numbers in New Hampshire. And as a result, you're seeing Barack Obama come back, you know, on Saturday. He's been here so many times now, I feel like he's buying a home here. So he knows to pay attention. We don't have early voting. It is going to be all about getting out the vote. There is no question. Everyone is counting noses here. What I think is in Barack Obama's favor is, just like in 2010 in Ohio and in many states, we saw a huge shift from either blue or purple to red here. That experience of the last 2 years has been very, very damaging for the Republican brand, because it has been so extreme. That has both invigorated Democrats and also made independents, which are the largest voting bloc in the state, a little bit leery of anything with an R next to his name, because that kind of extreme thing doesn't even fit into the New Hampshire sort of view of the future. So I think that helps Barack, but don't forget, Mitt Romney has New Hampshire as his second home. Mitt Romney has the former Governor John Sununu helping to run his campaign, and this is a state where they're spending a hell of a lot of money. And without early voting, that means whoever has the best ground game will win.
And let me add one thing about Ohio. We do have early voting. We've been early voting since October 2nd, and the Obama administration actually jumped into the early voting fight here in Ohio, because the Republicans who control the statewide offices had decided to close early voting the 3 days before the election, that final weekend, which was when a huge number of Democratic voters had turned out in 2008. And two courts ruled that the early voting should go on that final weekend. Finally, that's been settled, and there will be early voting that weekend. And that could end up being a critical turning point for the Obama administration to get those final 3 days of early voting. And there's a reason they got involved in that court fight, and I think that's because they really were counting on those votes coming in at the last 3 days.
What about this whole arc of all of the three presidential debates, throw in the vice presidential debate as well? Have you heard much from voters in your states if they've persuaded them one way or another? We talked about the first debate really kind of setting the tone for all of them. But Scott, what are you hearing on feedback from the debates?
I think the first debate got Republicans excited and got some undecided voters, and even a few voters that were leaning toward Obama kind of peeled off toward Romney, and it was just a huge shot in the arm. We had the Republican National Convention here in Tampa in August, and that didn't work. It didn't move the polls in Florida toward the Republicans. You did not see an outpouring of volunteerism. The first debate did that trick. Now, what I think Democrats said after the second debate in particular, after we talked to them, they were very relieved because they felt like, okay, you know, our guy is back, and at the very least, he's going to stop this descent that was going on in their poll numbers, and they pretty much have. But whether or not Obama can come back now is hard to tell. Oh, Florida was always a little bit of a reach. This is a purple state that tints red. All of our major offices are held by Republicans, from governor, including most of our congressional delegation. And so it was always a bit of a stretch to begin with. Only time will tell whether Obama can make up those 2 points he's behind right now.
Now, I want to go to the phone line right now. Susie from Ames joins us. Susie, what's your question?
Well, my question is, how can voters, citizens, be comfortable or feel secure about Romney's stances on so many issues when he changes as frequently as I change shoes?
Well, certainly that is a concern with many people who are trying to weigh options between that are, you know, for reelecting President Obama. But Susie brings up a point that I've heard from many voters on that side. But what are you hearing from voters, Karen or Scott, in this vein?
Well, I think that's a concern that some people who have been on the fence have mm-hmm. weighed in on. It's amazing that we still have a lot of people, it seems like, are on the fence. We've got, you know, polls are showing anywhere from 7 to 10% of Ohio voters still either have not decided or could change their mind. So those debates could potentially be critical to those folks. And, in fact, the Quinnipiac poll that came out yesterday that had Obama with a 5-point lead over Romney, 85% of those people in that poll said they plan to watch last night's debate and they expected the president to win it. So, you know, there's definitely the idea that the debate does make a difference, at least in terms of people wanting to watch and wanting to see what the candidates were actually saying.
Except, Clay, may I make a comment on what Susie said? And,
yeah.
And that's what, although she's right about the fact that he's changed his position so many times, isn't it fascinating that what he did on the first debate, which Barack Obama did not quite appreciate, is one, debates now have turned out to matter more than money, matter more than all the social media, because so many people tuned in to watch to make their own independent decision. And even though Mitt Romney moderated, moved away from the extreme, moved to the middle, even appeared to sort of switch positions on so many things, that did not hurt him with his base. In fact, what the base got so excited about was that he beat Barack Obama. They didn't care what he said. What he was able to do was beat Barack Obama. Obama didn't show up for the debate. Mitt Romney clearly did. He was much better in whatever he was delivering, and it didn't even matter whether it was consistent with his past. They don't expect Mitt to be consistent. What they want him to do was win. What he did in that first debate was win, and that was important for the base. So I wish policies mattered. I wish consistency mattered. It doesn't. What matters is, can you connect with people who are watching, in this case in the debate, and can you beat the opposition? He clearly did.
Scott or Karen, do you care to respond to that?
Well, people are really cynical.
You know, yes, what I mean? Exactly,
and
Scott.
I think voters are very. And so what you hear from people when, you know, if I talk to someone who's a partisan Democrat, they will say exactly what we heard from our caller, who is pretty, you know, Mitt Romney flip flops on everything. And then if you talk to a Republican who's well-informed and watches Fox News, and you know, he'll say it's Obama that's getting away with lying all the time, and the media is not calling him on it. And I think people hear this who are in the middle and are undecided, and they just say a pox on both houses. They're all a bunch of flip-flopping liars.
Exactly.
And so they make their decision based on other things.
I think that's absolutely right, and it really does depend on where you get your news and whether you are getting your news from sources that seem to go along with your personal opinion, because certainly you have that option now if you want to seek out opinionated, quote, news sources. So I think that's absolutely right.
Now, Arnie, Mitt Romney was governor of a neighboring state. Is candidate Mitt Romney a lot different than former Governor Mitt Romney?
Well, let's remember that Mitt Romney ran in Taxachusetts, a state that is probably more blue than fluorescent blue. And every time Mitt Romney talks about the fact that he reached across the aisle, it was a very short aisle, because it's only like a handful of Republicans and 99.9% Democrats. So how Mitt Romney was able to run and how he was able to govern were very similar. He was very moderate. He was almost liberal to the point that a lot of Republicans wouldn't recognize him. In some ways, how he governed in Massachusetts was he recognized that the power was with the Democrats, the power was with the Speaker of the House. He was kind of an impediment to power if he got in the way, so he worked well with the Democratic power. That's what you saw. In the end, he is about what is success. And success isn't partisan. Success is Mitt Romney's success. What you saw in the debates was he could moderate as much as he wanted as long as he could win. What you saw with him as governor is he could do what he needed to do to win. That may make some Republicans nervous, but from the debate perspective, I think that first win was crucial. He did it. Everything else after that has less meaning. Now the real question is, where are you going to invest your money and how are you going to get out your vote? Both bases are excited. Now the question is, who actually exercises the franchise?
Go ahead, Scott.
Republicans might have had a near-death experience with the Romney campaign. You remember, before that debate, all the stories were about how much is Obama going to win by and how that's going to cause losses all the way down the ballot.
Exactly,
I think they're so scared of losing that they are willing to put up with Romney saying whatever he needs to say.
Exactly.
And now what Romney is, he's like a Rorschach? I can't say it right.
Rorschach test.
That test, the ink blot test.
Yeah.
Yeah, when you look at the ink blot and it becomes whatever you want it to be. And which Romney is going to show up as president if he's elected? Is it going to be the moderate Romney or is it going to be the primary Romney who's severely conservative? The truth is there's no way to know. And I think he likes that ambiguity. It's working for him right now.
Now Karen, I want to ask you, conventional wisdom is that the debates don't really matter. I'm curious, in a state like Ohio that's so crucial, do you get that impression from the voters that you've been talking to?
I think everything matters at this point because it is so close. I think that the ads matter and the robocalls matter and the flyers matter and the debates matter. And so I think, you know, we've also got a U.S. Senate race here that's extremely important. And so I think the candidates and the campaigns are very, very motivated to try to take whatever they can get, because this is a pretty rich state. And you hear the stat all the time about no Republican has won the White House without winning Ohio, and that Ohio is such a great predictor of who's going to actually win. And so I think there's no taking any of this for granted. And certainly the voters that I've heard from have said that the debates did matter this time. It felt like that there was a lot of ground covered. And, you know, you can see even not only the criticism of the candidates, but the criticism of the moderators. And that gives you an idea of, you know, where people thought if these were fair or not. And that certainly shows people are paying attention.
Speaking of the criticism of candidates, Mark writes in, "While I was all set to vote for Obama, after last night, I've changed my mind. Both were rude. Neither deserves my vote." So he says he's going to be pursuing an independent candidate or voting with a write-in.
Huh. But both candidates are happy about that. That's
perfect.
I hate to say that. In some ways, that's perfectly fine. But I want to go back to something Karen said. Karen, I think debates mattered more in 2012 than maybe have ever mattered in the last 50 years.
I
think that's something that one, Barack Obama didn't appreciate. He went into the debates with a headset that said, "Do no harm." Well, it turned out not only did he not do enough by doing no harm, he lost. And this was the first time I think people felt they're so overwhelmed with the social media, they're so overwhelmed with the amount of money being spent on this campaign. Everything is micromanaged for this individual person. This was the first time we came together as a country, like we used to come together as a country to watch Walter Cronkite to a evaluate these two men without a filter of Fox News, MSNBC, CNN, you know, whatever the social media was telling us. And I think because that was so important and it is so close, that this, especially that first debate, was critical. It gave Romney hope, it gave his base hope, and it made it an even more contested race for this November.
And one thing we haven't really brought up yet is just the vice presidential debate was covered so much more, and people were really interested in both what Joe Biden and Paul Ryan had to say. Were you getting a lot of reaction from voters on the vice presidential debate?
Oh, sure. And, you know, I think it's interesting that people are watching the debates, you know, through this, through whatever channel that they're watching it through, and it's not being filtered. It's the raw audio, the raw video. But people are also watching, too, with the social media and watching with their friends on Twitter and Facebook. And I think that does provide a little bit of a filter, too, because if your friends are thinking the same things you're thinking, then it just becomes kind of an echo chamber here. And I find it fascinating to watch debates and have Twitter next to me and see this wide group of folks that I follow who follow me and see their reactions. And, of course, that's where you get the things like Binders Full of Women and Big Bird and Horses and Bayonets and all the stuff that comes up throughout the, these
They did it without the Twitter. They did it without the Twitter, trust me.
And that's where we'll end on the topic of Twitter. Thanks so much to Karen Kassler, State House Bureau Chief at Ohio Public Radio and Television, Scott Finn, News Director at WUSF in Tampa, Florida, and Arnie Arneson, a New Hampshire political analyst and former Democratic candidate for governor. Excuse me. Thanks so much to all of you.
Ciao. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
River to River is produced by Catherine Perkins and Emily Woodbury. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. Production assistance today from Caitlin Fry, Dennis Reese, Tony Daner, and Garrett Van Leeuwen. Podcasting and on-demand audio for River to River available at iowapublicradio.org. We always welcome your comments and questions about this program. Contact us at any time, rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org. Our theme music was composed and performed by the River Monks. I'm Clay Masters. River to River is a production of Iowa Public Radio News.